Female Pediatrician is a podcast of the Alabama chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, designed to bring the latest news and updates in child health to pediatricians across Alabama. We'll be covering a range of topics from advocacy and practice management to mental health and injury prevention and everything in between. So whether you're a pediatrician in Birmingham or Mobile, in Pine Level or Slap Out, this podcast is for you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Alabama Pediatrician Podcast. I'm your host today, Dr. Kim Middleton, Area 1 representative of the Alabama chapter of the AAP. On our last episode, we had talked about Dr. Claudette Poole's syphilis and HIV and pregnancy talk from the spring meeting. It was so great that we decided to have her on to share her information, and there was just so much information that we split it into two podcast episodes. So this is our second one, which is specifically on syphilis. And I'm glad to welcome again Dr. Poole, who is an assistant professor of pediatrics at UAB in pediatric ID and the associate program director for the PEDS ID fellowship program. She also has a master's in public health of epidemiology as well. So welcome back, Dr. Poole.
Thanks for having me back.
So getting right to it, what is the risk of congenital syphilis?
So it depends. If the question is how likely or what's the risk of you seeing congenital syphilis in Alabama, unfortunately, it is on the increase. So rates of syphilis in the state as well as the nation is on the increase. So the likelihood of women being infected during pregnancy is on the increase, which means the likelihood of infants getting infected during the pregnancy is on the increase. If it's what's the risk of the baby becoming infected if the mother is infected, it really depends on the stage of her disease. So if she is infected during the pregnancy, so she has either primary or early secondary syphilis, the risk to that infant is extremely high. So the estimates of transmission of the infection from mom to baby is close to 100%. It's somewhere between 60 and 100% of infants will get infected. If it's a tertiary infection, then the risk of the infection crossing the placenta and going to the mother goes down. And this, of course, is all in untreated syphilis infections in pregnancy. So that's the key. We need to be able to diagnose the infection in pregnancy so that we're able to treat, because without treatment, we're pretty certain that that baby will get infected.
That is a very high transmission rate.
Mm-hmm. That it is.
And you know, in med school, we always learn about torch infections and congenital syphilis symptoms. But I remember in your talk saying that most of the times they're asymptomatic at birth. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. So the likelihood that the baby will actually have overt symptoms at birth is pretty low. About 85% of infants with documented congenital syphilis will have, you know, an apparently normal exam without apparent symptoms. So you have to actually do testing to make that diagnosis. And about 15% of infants with congenital syphilis will have actual physical signs or symptoms suggestive of the infection. And those are the classic torch symptoms that we all learned about in medical school. So they could be small for gestational age, those classic rashes, big liver spleens, jaundice, the rhinitis from the nose, vesicles rupture or like a nasty looking infection around the umbilicus. All of those are the classic physical symptoms that you would see, but that actually happens in the minority of babies with congenital syphilis.
Okay. So speaking of testing, could you explain the different tests for syphilis?
Yeah, so it gets really confusing when we start talking about syphilis testing. And the way I like to break it down for people is that there are the what's called treponemal specific tests. So treponemal pallidum is the organism, right, that causes syphilis. The treponemal specific tests are essentially looking for the antibodies that your body produces in response to the infection. And there's lots of different ways or methodologies to detect those antibodies, which is what leads to all the different names we see for the treponemal specific tests. So there's the TPPA, the TPHA, the FTA absorbed. Those are all just different methodologies for those assays. In the interim, we've developed assays that have been able to automate looking for those antibodies. So in, you know, in the classic TPPA or FTA absorbed or the TPHAs, those are assays that have to be manually set up in the lab. We've now developed assays that are automated. And again, there's different terms used for these automated assays, like the EIA or the MBBIA. But again, that just refers to different methodologies of detecting the antibodies. But what's nice about these tests is that you can run hundreds of samples in one run in a lab. And so it's made screening large volumes of samples a lot easier and has become the standard of screening for syphilis in pregnancy, because you're going to run a whole lot of tests on women during pregnancy, and these assays have now become the standard of care. The problem with these assays is that once you've developed antibodies to syphilis, you will always have antibodies to syphilis, whether you've been treated or not. So it cannot distinguish between a past treated infection or a new infection. So that leads us to the non-treponemal specific tests, which are called the RPR or the VDRL. And these assays are looking for byproducts that cells release in response to infection. So they go up when you have the infection, and they go down and should essentially disappear when your infection is adequately treated. So we use the RPR as our test to be able to evaluate when a person was infected and if they're responding to treatment. So again, before the automated antibody assays, that used to be the standard screening assay that was done during pregnancy was an RPR. If your RPR is positive, to ensure it's not a false positive, because there are other autoimmune conditions, other types of infections that can give you a positive RPR, you would then confirm that RPR with a treponemal specific antibody test to confirm that the reason your RPR is elevated is in fact due to syphilis infection before you would start treatment. So now what we recommend in pregnancy is if you get an EIA, which is pretty much being done now in all cases because of the affordability of doing these automated assays, if that is positive, you really will want to get an RPR on that woman to confirm whether this is a new active infection or a past treated infection, especially if there's any question with her history.
Okay. I guess a trick question would be, say, if mom has a history of syphilis and also has, say, lupus, I guess the titer of the RPR would determine treatment, or how would that work?
Yes, you know, that is, you know, that's where you start getting into the nuance of this. But, you know, that's certainly possible. We definitely have women with lupus who will also get infected with syphilis. you know, hopefully a woman with lupus is in care and we have well-documented treatment for her syphilis history. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when in doubt, I think it's always better and safer to treat for syphilis because the treatment is safe, it's affordable, it's not complicated, than to look for alternate explanations and actually miss the infection.
I see. So what is defined as adequately treated syphilis for a mother during pregnancy?
So the only treatment that's been shown to be effective in treating both the mother and the fetus, because remember, we just assume the fetus is infected with the spirochetes because they transmit across the placenta so efficiently. So intramuscular penicillin is the standard of treatment because we know it will cross the placenta in high enough concentrations to treat the baby or the fetus adequately. If the mother is, you know, highly allergic to penicillin, that is a circumstance where you actually admit that woman to hospital and desensitize her to penicillin so that you're able to adequately treat both her and the fetus. A single dose is still considered sufficient, although there may be some emerging data that we may need to give more than one dose of IM penicillin during pregnancy. For both primary and early secondary syphilis. And that treatment has to be given at least 4 weeks before the baby is born to know that we've adequately treated the fetus as well. If it's late secondary or tertiary syphilis, then you have to give 3 doses of IM penicillin to adequately treat during that pregnancy. And those doses have to be given at least a week apart, but no more than 9 days have to elapse between the doses. So if for whatever reason the mother's lost a follow-up and there's been more than 9 days between dosing intervals, you have to repeat the whole treatment course. And it's because the spirochetes are pretty adept at hiding in nascent sites, which are harder to treat. And so that's why we give repeated dosing in the sort of later stages of syphilis.
I can imagine that has to be very difficult for compliance for certain high-risk mothers too.
Yes, it does. It becomes, you know, that's the challenge with syphilis is often trying to track down records, you know, especially if housing isn't stable. But your friend with trying to figure out a woman's history of syphilis and syphilis treatment is your local health department. So if you are taking care of a baby in newborn nursery with a maternal history of syphilis, whether it was pre-pregnancy or during that pregnancy, you have to contact your local health department to get the actual diagnosis history on that mother. You'll need to know what her RPR titers did throughout that pregnancy to be able to know what you need to do for that baby in newborn nursery. Just relying on the OB chart will often lead you astray because they don't always put the information that you need to be able to make an adequate decision on how to manage the baby. So just knowing the mother had syphilis, just knowing that she got 1 dose of penicillin is usually not enough to be able to know what you have to do for the baby.
Okay. So you need the diagnosis history, like when she was first diagnosed, whether it was prior to pregnancy versus during pregnancy. You need to know the RPR titers during the pregnancy, whether they went up, down, or whatnot. And then also when we were treated as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of information you need. And I'm sure we've all had that experience where, you know, you review the maternal chart and all they'll tell you is, you know, mom diagnosed with syphilis, given IM bicillin and a date, and that's all you have. And then maybe if you're lucky, you have the RPR titer on the mother at time of delivery. But if you don't know what her titers were beforehand, it's very hard to interpret what that RPR means. So we need to make sure that that RPR has gone down at least, you know, it's got to be more than fourfold having come down before delivery to know that we've adequately treated and that the infection responded as we wanted. And then you have to compare that maternal RPR to the infant RPR to then decide whether you think the infant was adequately treated or if you have to now treat that baby for congenital syphilis post-delivery.
Okay. So say the infant's RPR is positive and fourfold greater than mother's. What are the recommendations for treatment?
So before you start treatment, what we ask or what's recommended to do on those infants is they will need a lumbar puncture. You need to evaluate the CSF to see if there's any concern for infection in the CNS. The recommendation is to get long bone films to see if there's any bony lesions suggestive of congenital syphilis. And then if there's any concern for a big liver or spleen, you may want to get LFTs. You may want to get a CBC. You may want to get an abdominal ultrasound. But at a minimum, you're going to get long bone films, a CBC, and a lumbar puncture. You're then going to treat that baby with 10 days of IV penicillin. And again, the same holds true. If there's any interruption in the dosing of more than 24 hours between doses, you have to restart the whole 10-day course. It's 10 days full treatment, regardless of what your CSF showed. So if your CSF was suggestive of CNS infection, you're still going to treat that baby for 10 days. The difference is going to be the follow-up for those babies. So those babies that had evidence of CNS infection at birth, those babies will require repeat lumbar punctures at follow-up to make sure that they were that the 10 days was an adequate treatment course for them and we were able to eradicate all the spirochetes.
Okay. You had also mentioned during your talk that not all babies need the 10-day course and sometimes they need just a one-time dose. When would that be the case?
So this is really going to be for the babies where you have been able to obtain all the information you need from the health department. So if you have an infant that was born, has a normal physical exam, they're born full term, their RPR is less than four times the mother's RPR at delivery, and there's no concern for inadequate maternal treatment, meaning that she didn't receive the right medication within 4 weeks of that delivery, or any concern for potential reinfection in that woman. What would make you worry about reinfection is if her RPR initially was trending down and then bumped back up at time of delivery. So as long as all those criteria are met, then that baby does not have congenital syphilis. And if that mother was treated before this pregnancy, so she has a remote history of syphilis prior to this pregnancy, then we don't need to do anything for that baby. If, however, she was treated during the pregnancy, then the recommendation is to give just a single IM dose of penicillin to the baby to complete out the treatment to prevent congenital syphilis. So that's really for the babies who have an RPR at delivery, but it's less than four times the mom's, right? If it's greater than four times the mother's, then you've made a diagnosis of congenital syphilis and they need the full 10 days.
Okay. So just to summarize, the only babies who do not need any penicillin are ones where completely everything is normal and mom was diagnosed before this pregnancy.
That is correct.
And then otherwise, they get either one dose if everything looks good versus 10 days if anything questionable.
Exactly.
Okay. And for the one-time dose, do they need a full workup or what would they need in that situation?
No, again, in that baby, as long as that physical exam looks normal and that RPR is less than 4 times, I would not recommend a lumbar puncture and full eval on that baby. I think by doing that, we're going to end up over-diagnosing congenital syphilis by subtle abnormalities on CSF and long bone films. So if you really are meeting all the criteria and you have the information in hand, then do not do the LPs and long bone films and all of that. That's really only recommended for babies where there is a concern for congenital syphilis based on the maternal and infant RPRs or the history of syphilis, or of course, if the baby has any signs or symptoms suggestive of congenital syphilis.
Okay. And will this treatment or prophylactic dose of the penicillin, say a baby comes in for a neonatal fever to the ER, will that affect their sepsis workup?
It really shouldn't, but it's possible, that one-time dose, especially for early onset sepsis, could theoretically be a problem. But if those babies are coming in with symptoms, the likelihood that you're not going to be able to culture something should be really, really low.
So, what are the recommendations for outpatient once the baby leaves the nursery?
So that's really important. All these babies that are, where there is any concern for syphilis during that pregnancy. So whether you've diagnosed that baby with congenital syphilis, or you just gave that one-time dose, or you deemed it was extremely low risk, but the baby still had a positive RPR. All those babies should get follow-up RPRs done at their pediatricians. What we want to see is that over the course of the first year of life, those RPRs should all be steadily decreasing and returning to normal or to negative. You need to document that that RPR resolves, and it needs to resolve within a year of life. If it's busy trending up, then those babies need a repeat evaluation and can be referred to infectious disease. If those RPRs are trending down and are gone by a year of age, they do not need a repeat evaluation or referral to infectious disease, except the babies that had abnormal LPs initially. Those babies need repeat LPs at 6 months of age.
And how often do PCPs need to be testing the babies?
So, I think to make it feasible for PCPs, having the RPRs checked when the babies are returning for their routine follow-ups, right? So those babies are being seen at typically a month of age, 2 months of age, 4 months of age, 6 months of age. Those would be good visits to be getting the RPRs to document that they go back to normal.
Okay. And another question, say a baby had syphilis or was treated for syphilis, is there a risk of them having issues in the future?
So if the babies are adequately treated, then no, they should be fine. It's the babies that aren't adequately treated or who are missed are at high risk for long-term sequelae. Syphilis is known to cause chronic infections. They can often be hard to diagnose, and their clinical manifestations are typically neurologic. So they will result in developmental delay, seizures, hearing deficits, visual deficits. Those children can develop bone abnormalities, teeth abnormalities, and cardiac lesions.
Okay. Well, those will be good things to, I guess, for the PCPs to keep an eye on. So, I guess if a baby was treated and then had growth or developmental delays, is that they may need to reevaluate the baby again or the child?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yep, that is correct.
Well, thank you so much. That was a lot of really good information.
You are very welcome. And hopefully, again, if we can adequately screen women during pregnancy, and it's like HIV, the recommendation to do syphilis screening in pregnancy is early in that first trimester. Again, all women should get screened again at 28 to 32 weeks, and then again at delivery. And if we are doing that well, we should not be having any babies born with congenital syphilis.
I think that's a great take-home point.
Well, thank you, Kim. It was good talking.
Yes, thank you for joining us and for updating us on neonatal care for syphilis and HIV exposure in utero. And thank you to everyone joining us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And for anyone else listening, if you're interested in being on here, know of a good speaker, or have a topic you'd like to hear, please let us know. Thank you.